On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, before we begin this episode, I just want to give a small disclaimer. Terrence and I recorded this interview way back in January during the off season, and obviously it's August now, so there's a lot of things that change over time, and if the dates and some of the things we're saying don't make sense timeline-wise, just know that this is a little bit of an older interview, and that's why there's a little bit of the discrepancy going on. But other than that, the content is really good. I think you're going to enjoy this one. There's a lot of really, really good stuff coming from it. And with that being said, let's get into the episode. All right, everybody. I'm here with Terrence Kennel. TK, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Thanks a ton for having me. Let's see. So currently I'm the head of strength conditioning for UMass men's basketball out in Amherst. Previously, I worked in Kansas City for a professional women's soccer team in the NWSL. I was with the Houston Astros for a little over 2 years. First year in AA in the minor leagues down in Corpus Christi, good old Port City in South Texas. And then after that was rehab coordinator for about a year or so. And then just worked in London for a while, did a master's there as well. Working in rugby and fighting and basketball. Worked in Japan for a bit, working in rugby. Then went to my undergrad at Arkansas State University down in Jonesboro. Sure no one's ever heard of that place at all. And yeah, I think that's pretty much it. That's like the general gist.
Yeah, so you've been around, you've been all over, and I, like I said off camera, I've followed your stuff for afar, and I've always wanted to have you on, and so appreciate you coming on. And first thing I really just want to kick it off with is just talking about your current role in college basketball and how it compares to your time in professional baseball, just how you're training the athletes, what your day-to-day looks like, and just kind of go from there. So we'll just kind of kick it general and then see where it takes us.
I would say some of the biggest – differences I would go with in terms of like general like training in the weight room will be the low hanging fruit. A lot of times with basketball players tends to be on a strength end, and so I've had probably more focus on just pure strength work than I probably had in maybe the last 2 or 3 years outside of like a rehab setting. It's because that's generally low hanging fruit basketball players. I mean, like Carl Valley, like people said, the NBA has like no barbell association and stuff like that. So basketball players tend to be allergic to the weight rooms, to kind of build that trust a bit early on. That's probably been the biggest emphasis. Another thing was, you know, getting elements like catapult, getting players and coaches bought into using that as well. And we don't get true GPS metrics because we're inside, so we just use a metric called player load. Getting players to buy into that and getting to understand a bit of like load monitoring, like load management. I know it's like a toxic word in like basketball circles, but essentially it's just like, hey, let's not run everybody into the ground every single day. the time to run everybody to the ground, the other time we can pull back. So that's kind of been biggest pieces. Adding things like force play to kind of objectify some of our training a bit and see what we can push and pull certain guys in certain directions based on their own needs, and looking at various asymmetries and things like that guys pick up on. Especially in sport basketball, there's tons of contacts on a very unforgiving surface like a hardwood court. Biggest thing is just a general, just pure force and like strength output of being like, hey guys, like we have to tolerate tons of decelerations, reaccelerations, you know, multiple times a week with games for 40 minutes. And in between that, we're practicing, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours. I'm lucky why I don't have. There's a lot of basketball coaches, and if anybody who's worked in basketball before, there's a fair amount of college basketball coaches who push 2.5 3-hour practices like every day. I'm lucky where I don't have a coach and a coaching staff that's like that at all. But so getting to understand that, you know, hey, there's a lot of force we have to generate in basketball. That's a lot of force you need to be able to tolerate and accept, and it not break you in the long run. And having some of those conversations of like, it's really just protective, like armor building, essentially, like doing some hypertrophy work, doing some true like strength and chasing some intensity in the weight room, chasing those upper limits of like percentages of like 80-85%+ like in the weight room, and be like, hey, it's like, it's okay. Like, we can lift heavy and like it won't ruin your jump shot. You'll be fine.
So you mentioned off camera that like this is a new environment for you. They've had other strength coaches kind of in and out. Yep. So like when you first started, was it in season or out of season? And like, how are you creating those relationships so quick when they're just used to seeing people in and out of the door?
Luckily, I started off at a good time. I moved here at the end of August, so I had to meet all the staff first, and then the players were back basically like August 30th, September 1st, and we got going with preseason. And I think it just came from just like being kind of authentic and being genuine of like, hey, like I was working in baseball before this, I was working in soccer before this. It's like, have I worked in a team setting in basketball yet? So like, no, and I was very upfront about that. I played basketball, it was my main sport growing up. Play up to my freshman year of college, so at like a D2 school like this, at least they respect kind of that aspect. And then talking to coaches all the time as well, and asking kind of the right questions, asking players kind of some of the right questions of like, hey, what's worked for you in the past, and then how can we facilitate some of those things, and what didn't work, what can we potentially maybe change, whether that be, you know, change up, but simply some things like changing a different exercise. We're like, oh, a bat squat, like make sure that your low back feel tight, you know, the way it feels. Like we can front squat, still a bilateral lower body movement, that's at the end of the world. Like, so some of those, like just kind of open and honest conversations with the players early on and with staff as well. And it's coming off being like, hey, like, yeah, this is my first year doing this in the college basketball setting, but like I've worked in multiple other sports. And so I can learn, ask a bunch of questions, things like that. And it's probably been the biggest like benefit. I think starting when I did, feel like the end of August, like first of September kind of time frame, I think helped me too. I can't imagine, you know, being dropped in like November or December when like, girl, you're playing games. You're like, hey, I'm this new person. We're gonna change the way we train. People be like, yeah, man, fuck that. I don't know if I can cuss on here. My bad.
It's good. Okay. My first year in pro ball, I started in like the middle of March, which as you know is like chaos spring training time. And I just got dropped into like 200 players. I finally got to like make these relationships with players, and then they went to AA and AAA, and I was like, what is this? And they're like, oh, this is extended spring training. And I was like,
yeah,
what the hell is this?
Yeah,
so I feel
17 and 19 year olds, and English is not their first language for most of them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, obviously you're in basketball now, but you know the baseball life. So I'm sure it was super beneficial for you to be able to have that time with the coaches and kind of settle in and just get to know the lay of the land before the players came back, versus that, like, hey, I'm here, we're playing games. Yeah. Like, what are we supposed to do?
I think we'll probably help prepare me for that too. Is like when I was working in baseball, I tell players all the time, like, I hadn't played baseball since I was like 9 years old. I was fucking awful at it when I played. So I stopped playing it at a pretty early age and didn't like really watch the sport very often. I'd say like highlights, things like that, but didn't follow it like regularly. And I said, those kind of conversations early on and being kind of authentic in that way of like, hey, I'm not going to try and be like, hey, I don't know what on point means when it comes to hitting, like asking any coaches like my first day, like, what are you talking about? So having those kind of, I think maybe that kind of prepared me more than I thought it did probably for stepping into this role. And that like, hey, I worked, that was a sport where I had no idea what this sport was like. Like, didn't know what the culture was like of the sport, hadn't played in forever, didn't really follow it, had to pick up on a ton of it like when I got hired, before I actually like reported, before spring training started. That probably helped me a ton in that sense, coming here.
So when you're in baseball, the guys always make you like play catch or like hop in the cage. Do you ever get to like shoot around with the guys and like, do they talk shit to you? Like, you ever hop in with them and just let them know like, hey, I can still shoot?
Sometimes like they'll see us shoot around. We play like some staff pickup before the season started. We play at staff pickup, and the players would like just be walking to the building and like video, put on like Instagram Live and stuff like that, and like watch us play. Because most of our staff, almost staff, is way better basketball players than me, pretty much. Like, the most of them played either, they all played Division One or higher. One played in the NBA. Another one, so the others all played overseas for like 10 plus years. I'm just out there doing a dirty work on court.
It gets you street cred, though, like when the players see you shooting around and like, oh, okay, this guy knows what he's doing out there. You can throw the ball, you know, you can play catch and make it reach. They're like, oh, okay, this guy gets it a little bit. So,
Dude, the players would make anytime I threw a baseball, players would laugh at me so bad. They're like, T.D., you're like, only reason you don't have Tommy John's because you don't throw the ball hard enough. it's all elbow flick.
Rotation of the shoulder. Yeah. One of these little dart throws. Hey, I got it there. That's all that matters, right? So how about your day-to-day? Like, obviously, I'm familiar with the baseball schedule, and I would say most of our listeners probably know at this point. Like, how does college basketball compare for you to just the day-to-day of professional baseball?
Yes, I'll say it's pretty similar to being an affiliate in some ways, especially in the preseason. Because in the preseason, I would have, and then when guys were in class right now, obviously on winter break, so that's nice. Our schedule's easier. But then in the preseason, I have to keep the weight room. We have our own weight room, which is nice. We only have like three racks in here, you know, a couple benches, stuff like that. It's like pretty like narrow space, but it's quite big. And to keep kind of just easier as I was starting here was like I kept it in small groups around their class schedule. The guys come to class, so I had like groups of like, you know, four or five. So I had usually like 3 to 4 groups a day, which kind of reminded me of being like an affiliate where you have like a pitcher group, position player group. Every now and then, obviously, you have like the relievers who want to get an extra lift in just because they're bros most of the time. And then after that, like, me and the coaches come up practice when we're doing in practice. Luckily, like my coaching staff, my head coach is very open minded and worked in kind of like a tactical periodization approach of like planning practice and having like high days and low days throughout the week. After that meeting, then you usually have practice in the afternoon. I'm usually done by 4:30, 5 o'clock, pretty much. If I have a lift group that day, it's usually first group at like 9:30. I may have like three of those, like not back to back. Other times like a 9:30 or 12:30, like a 1 or something like that, or 1:30. So it's usually, you really not too busy. So a decent amount of downtime in the day. Here I do things also like order food, like I'm at an affiliate, so like I order a lot of like a pregame and postgame meals. Training table also. We're lucky enough here, we're a resource to have training table like, you know, a couple times a week, which is like getting like food for after practice. Myself, the women's basketball strength coach, will go to like Target or like Big Y, something like that, like grocery shopping, like fill up like our fridge, like lactose-free milk and like breakfast sandwiches and fruit cups and stuff like that. And we'll make protein shakes. So there are a lot of things that are very much like similar to what you do in affiliate for sure.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it sounds like affiliate life. And basketball is the only team you're working with there?
Yep. Yeah, so lucky with just like men's basketball only. Like the women's basketball strength coach is the same. He's women's basketball only. And we're also lucky when we have like our own building as well. So like, I mean, sometimes it can be a bit isolating because I don't necessarily see the other or talk to the other strength coaches in the school that much very often. But it's nice is that, you know, we can always have access to this building. We have two separate courts as well. So own weight room. So planning and scheduling is like super easy on that side of it.
It sounds like a pretty good gig then. It sounds like you're enjoying yourself. And the baseball life kind of prepared you in a way for this current position.
Oh, yeah. So as you know, like in an affiliate, you have to wear multiple hats sometimes. So I think it definitely did. So even like things like submitting receipts, like buying food, I was like, oh, I've done this before.
Yeah, I try to say on the podcast, like if anybody can have a chance to work in minor league baseball, like they really should, just because it prepares you so much for so many other things that like you don't really even think about as a strength coach, especially in school. Like they don't tell you like, hey, when you're a strength coach, you got to order meals pre and post game and submit the receipts for reimbursement. You're like, what? Like, this wasn't in the essentials textbook.
Yes, exactly. So it's more so have to do other than being away from it's like, oh yeah.
Right. So one of the things you mentioned with basketball is a lot of coaches run long practices. They like to run guys into the ground. And one of the things that I really like on your social media is you talk a lot about conditioning. And I tend to have different views about conditioning than I think most people in baseball. And this might be more baseball centered than basketball, but we can talk general athletics.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people in baseball only look to sprinting and they don't look to the other aspects of conditioning and general heart rate work and things like that. So let's kind of talk on just your overall thoughts on conditioning, and then we'll kind of get more specific with certain topics here.
Yeah. I think for me, kind of my general principle of conditioning is like, it becomes trendy and not trendy. It's like all like every like year or so of like doing aerobic like conditioning work, and it's like, hey, like that's just like the way room, the reason you do like a GPP block of general basic, not sexy, really boring like weight room work. It's the same thing from the conditioning, because the heart is still a muscle, and doing like, you know, best way to build on aerobic basis is to do volume, and that's okay. And I think and you know this too, being in baseball, that people instantly hear that they think like, oh, one guy's running poles and like running a bunch of laps around the field. It's like, no, man, you can put them on a bike. Like, put someone on a bike for 30 minutes, have them working like a 125 to 140 beat per minute. Like, that's fucking hard. like that's work. And like, you know, you can progress that. You can start from even 20 minutes and building that capacity up. And that's truly to work, like working hard in that zone and building that aerobic base, because it just does help every other facet of recovery, like recovery between bouts of intensity, if you're on the mound, between swings. And also with baseball, you know, like playing back to back days on field, it's like your recovery between days is so important. And like your ability to recover, have a larger open base, you know, and recover between high intensity bouts. Like, you don't train that by doing more high intensity bouts. Like, you have to have a base for that first. The best way to have a base for that is to do aerobic work. And it's funny, like for Andy Ryland, a USA football, like he says like that's the real like mental toughness. Is sitting on a bike for 40 minutes and be like, hey, don't go higher, don't drop lower, just stay in there for 40 minutes. It's like, because it's miserable at times, but the benefit of it and the residual training effect is so important. And I think just because of it, I think simply really because it's boring, people don't really want to do it. They'd rather do something more high intensity. They'd rather just run tempos, or they'd rather just sprint, because like sprinting is fun. And also you can do 5-6 reps and be done. No one wants to be like, hey, you're gonna sit in this wild bike for 35 minutes. I'll see you in half an hour. Like, no one wants to do that. Because I think mentally, it's just not as fun to do. But it's so valuable, because it does establish that base. And once you've kind of built that up, you don't have to train it and touch it that often, because the residual effect is so long lasting. They can do other things like interval runs, mass work, tempos, high, like more just general sprinting, because it's going to help your ability to recover between those intensity bouts. And if you're on a mound, I think a lot of research shows, like with pitching, it's like within just a pitch, I think you get up to like 85% of your max heart rate within like one pitch. And your ability to recover between that, because you have another pitch in 45 seconds to a minute, kind of based on the clock, how fast you kind of work as an individual. It's like, that's so beneficial. It's your ability to throw 95 in the first inning. Well, if you can call it 95 inning seven as a starter, it's like, that's so valuable. And that's what separates, you see, Astros specific, like the Verlanders of the world. Like, he's calling 98 in inning one and inning seven. Like,
so I have a ton of like my own beliefs that I want to get into here and kind of talk with you through this. And the original, like, you're talking about the tweet the other day from your buddy, and I saw that, and that was like, I saw that and I was like, all right, this is the icing on the cake. Like, I'm getting this guy on the podcast. And it was the one about mental toughness for 45 to 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, I don't know if it was in that thread or the next one, but it was like, everybody says that in the weight room, if you think it's hard, that's what you should do. But with conditioning, it's not the same. Like, if it's hard, you shouldn't do it. And like, it's becoming like, when I was a kid, I played hockey. My dad would just randomly take me to the track and just run me into the ground. And it's like, like you said, like, I built such an aerobic base that like, I'm 29 years old now. I'm way older, but I can touch that every once in a while. And like, it's there. Like, it just hasn't left me. And a lot of it is, like you said, that mental aspect of like even hopping on a bike for 30 to 60 minutes. Like, I had COVID, we have a spin bike at our place, and I would just hop on for 30 minutes twice a day, because one, I had nothing else to do, two, I was crazy. But like, three, like it was challenging for me. And like, I think a lot of younger athletes working in like private settings or high school settings are getting to the point where they're trying to train only sprint and only like high output. And it's like, oh, well, pro baseball is this. And people don't realize that, like, yes, one event in pro baseball is like max effort. But yeah, like you said, you have to play over and over and over and over again. And like, and the thing is, if the 12-year-old kid, 15-year-old kid isn't getting any of that aerobic base work, by the time they get to pro ball, we almost have to like reverse engineer them and be like, hey, we need to build this up or you're going to break down. Have you, did you see that when you were in pro ball?
I think the, at Astros, like, most of the players are pretty good about like a lot of, like a lot of them had a pretty decent aerobic work. Their biggest issue was they equated aerobic work to always just running. And some of them had like patella tendonitis, you know, especially like a lot of pitchers, patella tendonitis, or a guy coming out from an Achilles rupture. And it's like, no, so we can get these same adaptations and like an easier on the body environment, because we're just searching for the central adaptation of the heart. We're not searching for, let's say, the peripheral load nowhere near as much because of the specificity of obviously pitching. Now, if you're like other, you're a court sport or a field sport, it's like, I always use a nomenclature of like running is king. Like at some point, it's like you can, a bike's great, a rower is great, a versa climber, but if your sport involves you locomotive motion of running, then at some point you gotta fucking run.
Yes, 100%.
You gotta do some work on your actual feet. But I think definitely so. You see, I think it's because like sprinting is in vogue. Sprinting and high intensity efforts is like the in vogue thing, and training with the A-lactate system is the in vogue thing. It's like, yeah, it's like that. So you, no one's saying you shouldn't do that, but you need to earn your right to do that multiple times a week. Because even if you just you do sprint work 3 times a week or something like high intensity output A-lactate work 3 times a week, the trainability of that is going to be less because your outputs are going to start to decrease as that week goes on because you don't recover as well because your aerobic base is shit. So it's like have that general base of ability to recover between bouts, recover between days of high intensity work. So then it increases your ability to train those high intensity outputs. Like people want to point to the fun side of Charlie Francis training system of, oh, you know, we sprinted 3 times a week, you know, heavy, high CNS, high day lifts. Like, yeah, it's low days. It's like Ben Johnson's other sprinters were doing 2 and 3K of tempo on a low day. Even up to 35 or 4K in the offseason of tempo, it's like, that's a lot of work. Like, that's a big base to get up to that point. And it's like, you can't skip the things you don't like to do just because you don't like them.
Yes, 100%. And the thing is, like, there's a lot of people on, like, social media and, like I said, private settings that look to specific starting pitchers in the big leagues, and they're like, oh, this guy throws 95. I bet he's not running poles. And like the reality is a lot of those guys do long distance work on their day after they pitch. Like it's just that it's just who they are. Right. And they've been able to build that up. And guys that I've talked to are like, some days I don't feel like doing it, but if I do it now, by the end of the season, I'll still have something in the tank because I'll have built that up over the season. Where like, if I feel bad and every single time I feel bad, I just don't do something, like, I'm never going to want to do anything, because the reality, and especially in the big leagues, is nobody feels 100% ever. No. Like,
it's way too long.
Yes. The thing is, even in April, you've done 6 weeks of spring training where you're waking up at 6 a.m. every day, you're playing a 1 o'clock game, and then like you totally flip the script to night games right away in April.
I've never understood that. Me and Sports 90 talk about that all the time. It's all with my director. But why do we start at 5:45 for 6 weeks, and then just to show up at 11 a.m.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like in April you make that switch, and it's like guys' bodies are out of whack, and then they kind of get in sync with the schedule, and then next thing you know, it's May and you have rainouts, and then you start including doubleheaders and things like that. And then it starts getting hotter out. And it's just, there's never a point where you feel 100%. There are days where you're going to feel better than not. But the reality is, like, you're never going to feel 100%. And then the other thing is, when pitchers are on the mound, especially relievers, and they're throwing in front of 30 or 40,000 people, like the adrenaline is so high that a lot of them start with a heart rate that's elevated. And then not only that, like the reality is a lot of them are probably caffeinated at some point in the day, yeah, or
caffeinated pre-workout.
Yes, exactly. And so like
smashing C4 in a bullpen.
Yeah. So a lot, you know how it is, right? And so a lot of them start with an elevated heart rate to begin the inning. And it's not even like, and then you include the pitching, and then the next thing they pitch again the next day. And then some of them go 3 days in a row. And like, if they don't have that aerobic base, if they don't have that ability to recover, like they're, in my mind, like they're probably going to crash and burn.
Yeah, 100%. It's just like you said, just one of those things people want to jump to the thing, like the cherry pick the things they want to do that are more fun to do. And really, a lot of times, as you probably experienced, the hardest part about getting it got, especially the starters who do that aerobic work, is getting them to like not do it on feet all the time. So, hey, let's not beat up your body as much and your joints. You know, you're 35 years old, you've been in the big leagues for a decade. Like, let's get you something else. Like, oh, here's a bike, here's a spin bike, here's a echo bike, a salt bike. Like, let's do this instead. Like, that's like part of the hard part sometimes.
Yeah, 100%.
People don't realize so many pitchers at the elite and sub elite level really like do like a fair amount of aerobic work.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. And the other thing I agree with you is like a lot of pitchers nowadays are just big dudes, right? They're all 6'5", 250. And like, it's a lot of pounding on the ankles, the knees, the back, the hips. So like we need to do that work, but it may not be those long distance runs. Sometimes it is longer distance runs. Sometimes you have to mix pulls in, half pulls, whatever. But like, there's other ways to do that. Right. And sometimes it's, you know, getting them outside in the sun to run. Sometimes it's avoiding the turf, so we do it inside, right? Like it's dictated by the situation.
Do it in tennis shoes. Tennis shoes. Do on the outfield instead of the warning track. Just a little softer surface. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, but I, the big picture is like I don't think that pitchers should be avoiding running, and I think that's a huge narrative right now for people. Is like pitchers don't need to run because they're high explosive athletes, and if you train slow, you're gonna get slow.
Yeah, it's like, man, it's like people are starting to like reiterate the old rhetoric of like, oh, if you do aerobic work, it makes you slow and weak. It's like, that's just physiologically not true. Come on.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's the old like the picture of Ben Johnson, the sprinter, next to the marathon runner. It's like, oh, if you run distance, you're gonna look like this. And it's like the reality for you to be a marathon runner and be good at marathon running, the amount of work you have to put in like far exceeds any amount of like aerobic work we're gonna do. Like,
yeah,
we ride the bike a couple of times a week, like you're not gonna all of a sudden be a marathon runner.
Yeah, we'll do a couple like cardiac output intervals of like 3 minutes on, 90 seconds off, like you're gonna be okay.
100%. So it's just I wanted to have you on and just discuss this because I think it needs to be said. And like, you've been in baseball and I followed your stuff and I think you're very intelligent, especially with the conditioning stuff, that I thought we needed to have a talk like this. So are there any other like beliefs that you have that are different than like what's popular in vogue or like industry beliefs right now?
I think my biggest one is that I hate a trap bar deadlift. I'm not a fan of it because, I mean, some of it is, I think, some like a false sense of how strong someone is in a lot of ways. But I think also because it tends to lack a lot of the eccentric quality, because most people just stand up with it and either like, if they hold on to it on the way down, they just like drop it really fast, or they just let go. And we need those eccentric qualities. Like, those eccentric qualities are important for our ability to accept force and redirect, and that's part of the process too. And like, just so, yeah, a trap bar with 400 for five is more fun than a 235 bat squat or a 235 front squat for five. But it's like, we need some of the essential qualities too. So that's probably my biggest hot take, is that I cannot stand a trap bar deadlift. I program for like, I mean, there's a time and place for like anything, and they're definitely nice for like teaching purposes. I think using a trap bar, I think trap bar is great for like you using that eccentric pattern just because of the stance you're in. But I'm not a huge fan of like the exercise in general.
The other thing with the trap bar too is you have the, like, they're getting bigger and bigger, like the make of them. So like the handles are so high that you're like, quarter locking out. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I got 600 on it. It's like, it was like high handle, and it was like the, you know, the perform better bar that's like 25 inches off the ground or whatever. Yeah. Are you really, really like, I don't think so, but I agree. Like, there is a time and a place. And honestly, I really like trap bar jumping myself. So like,
yeah, I like trap bar jump.
I think it's kind of that in between of like, you know, body weight jumping exercise and like loaded exercise for guys that, yeah, I think a lot of people just miss that part of the continuum, right? Like, they load super heavy, they do body weight jumping, but there's not a lot of that like in between loaded jumping for athletes. Yeah. So for me, I really like that. I mean, obviously in professional baseball, as you know, like, you're going to have to use the trap bar with guys. There are plenty, yeah, of guys that are just not going to put a bar on their back, yeah, which is fine. But like, again, getting them to slow down that eccentric part, or even doing like paused reps or things like that, maybe can help mitigate that.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely.
But yeah,
that's something we did for sure. For guys who were like super stubborn about it.
There's definitely those guys that are like, they just want to load it up heavy and like, yeah, feel like they're lifting heavy. Like, yeah, I did 500. It's like, it's a trap bar, though.
Really? Yeah, it's a trap. They're going out telling about, yeah, pull 600 pounds. It's like, kind of quarter stood up with it.
Right, 100%.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude this episode with Terrence. I hope you enjoyed this one. This was an awesome talk for me. I thought there was a ton of really good information, both for coaches that are just moving around and getting into new experiences, and more specifically with the conditioning stuff. So I really enjoyed this one. I thought there was a lot of good stuff to come from it. And then part two will have more good information as well. But three things that I took from Terrence in this episode: work to learn and understand the language of the sport you work with. Understand the desired adaptation that you're trying to get and gear your training towards that. And don't skip out on valuable training tools just because you don't like them. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.